The following podcast is brought to you by the new AT&T.
Addison and Alex finally break the sexual tension. Derek discovers the joy of earplugs, and George loses a loved one. We'll have insights on all that and more on today's official Grey's Anatomy podcast, hosted by ABC.com. Well, this week was a definite somber episode in the world of Grey's Anatomy. In conclusion to last week's two-parter, one of our heroes suffered the ultimate loss, their father. And it turns out that this story was inspired from real life. Once again, we bring you another podcast from executive producer Krista Vernoff and editor Susan Vail, both of whom played integral roles in the creation of this gut-wrenching story. Looking ahead, though, next week's episode, Great Expectations, promises to be a little lighter. That airs on Thursday, January 25th from 9 to 10 p.m. on ABC. Here now are Krista and Susan.
Hi, I'm Krista Vernoff, the writer of the last two episodes that you watched.
And I'm Susan Vail, the editor of the last two episodes that you watched, 6 days, part one and part two.
And we're going to talk about part two.
Part two.
Okay, so now I'm going to talk about stuff that I couldn't talk about last week, because if I talked about it last week, it was going to give away way too much of where the episodes were going.
Yeah.
But at the end of part two, you saw a card in memory of Bob Vern. That is, first of all, I'm super grateful that that ABC and everybody were willing to put that card on the hour, because that's my dad, who I've written about on the blog a lot, and which is why I couldn't really talk about this episode being autobiographical last week. Because those of you who listen to the podcast and read the blog would have put it all together, and you would know that where George's dad, where we were going with George's dad. I'm super sorry we had to kill George's dad. I know a lot of you are really upset about that. I'm deeply upset about it. I'm super sorry that my dad had to die. I didn't want it to go that way, and it did, and that's how life goes. These episodes for me are very autobiographical. My dad had esophageal cancer, which George's dad had. He had other medical complications. He went to the surgeon. He was told that if they found X, Y, and Z when they opened him up, they would not proceed. He went to the surgeons behind our back and told them to please proceed no matter what. We didn't find out about that until we were being told we had to unplug him. Mm. We lived the scene, the farting scene that happens in the hallway in part two, and I'm not going to tell you who it was in my family, but it was one of the hardest I've ever laughed in my life. Yeah. We lived through the crimping of the intubation and the reintubation, and what was very difficult, and what we tried to depict here is. He's doing well. He was doing well. And we did also obsess over his urine bag, even though none of us were doctors. They had told us how important. Somehow, you know, a little bit of information can be really dangerous. And we became obsessed with the urine bag and the urine output. So we felt like he was doing pretty well. And then they came to us and said, we have to reintubate him and he might die from this procedure. So to prepare yourself for that, when you still think he's going to recover from surgery, we tried to show that here. And, and at the end of the week, we had to unplug him. So in much the same way as is depicted here, which I have to say, it was really hard as a 6.5 months pregnant woman to produce this episode. It was really hard to see those scenes shot. And there was one point, and it was actually a scene from part one where George sees his dad for the first time and comes around the wall, and Meredith takes his arm and he's shaking and he says, that's my dad, that's my dad. And we were rehearsing that scene, and I'm standing, you know, because I watch rehearsals, and then I come back to the office and I write some, and then I go and watch the shooting of the scene after they've lit it, and I'm watching the rehearsal, and I'm standing straight in T.R. Knight's eye line. Like, I'm kind of all he can see. I'm standing right in front of him. And he says, that's my dad, and I burst into tears, like pregnant lady tears. Like, no, you know, like when you're not pregnant, you can feel tears coming on, and you can kind of go, ooh, I better walk away, or I'm going to start crying. I swear to God, it's like snot comes flying out of your nose with no warning, and you're sobbing with no warning. And I was like, oh, my God. And I turn and I walk away as fast as I can. But TR's like, oh. TR's lovely. He came and followed me and was loving and lovely. You know, it went to write something this close to home is not a thing I would do for every show. But I feel that, you know, having been with Grey since the beginning, there was an opportunity here to share kind of what I went through and what my family went through, because I know I coined the term shortly after my dad died. I discovered the Dead Dads Club and coined the term sort of because I had friends who were in it and friends who weren't. And my friends who weren't, there was a lot of, oh, honey, what can I do for you? Are you, oh, can I, anything I can do? And my friends who were in the club knew that there was nothing they could do. You know, they could just sit there quietly. They got it. There's, you get it. And once you're in that club, your world is forever changed. It never really totally changes that you don't know how to exist in a world where your father doesn't. It lifts, it gets better, it gets easier. It's been 6 years for me now. Mm-hmm. But I think that what Christina says is true. The world is forever changed when one of your parents dies. Mm-hmm. And, oh, hey, the phone. That's like a Betsy Chandra runner, isn't it? The phone. My phone's ringing. Sorry. Anyway, I'm not sure what I was saying.
Dead Dad's Club.
Dead Dad's Club.
Yeah.
So this is by way of telling you, a lot of you have been sort of writing us and writing on the internet, as our president would say, about how much you don't want George's dad to die. I'm with you. I didn't want George's dad to die either. But dads die, and they die quite suddenly. My dad called me and told me he had the flu, and 2 weeks later he was dead from surgery. And that was a thing for me, because I'm not a fan of hospitals. I'm not a fan of surgery. Writing on a show every week that by the nature of the show has to glorify surgery has been a little bit difficult for me, just like on a spiritual level. Like, how do I, why am I pushing surgery? So to say, you know what, sometimes it's the surgery that kills the person. George, you know, Mr. O'Malley could have had months. And you know, the same was true of my dad. So.
Well, and it was, I was really moved by this episode and on a deeply personal level, because I lost my mom very suddenly about 3.5 years ago to organ failure. And so it was just stunning to get these dailies and to see what this family is going through. And that scene that you were talking about in part one where you burst out crying.
Yeah.
Well, I think just about every scene in this episode with George, the scene where George and his dad talk in part one and they talk about dog murder.
Right.
I cried through that scene and I would just close my door and cry with all these dailies, because I would look at them and I'd think, this is the last major conversation that George and his dad are going to have. And it just makes you, if you've gone through the loss of a parent, it really does, it reminds you of how you start remembering those things. The last real conversation you had was about, you know, a dog or something really inane. And it's almost funny, but that's life and that's how it does work out. And anyway, it was just a beautiful episode to get to work on. I felt like it was very right that I got to cut this, because I really understood that experience. And
and
Krista's right that when you go through this experience, you totally understand what it's like for other people. A good friend of mine just lost his dad to Alzheimer's.
Awesome.
A story that we're very familiar with on Grey's Anatomy.
Yeah.
And he really knew how to listen to me when I lost my mom. And we've had several really beautiful conversations about that since then. So it's just, it's an experience I think a lot of our audience members will likely be able to share. And
well, everybody has either been through this or will go through this.
Yeah.
Pretty much everybody.
Yeah.
You know, God willing, your parents are not supposed to outlive you. So in the best of all possible worlds, your parents will die. You know? Yeah. It's a horrible thing, but it's a universal thing. It's a thing we share. And I think for a character like George, who we all love so much, to have to watch him walk through that is very powerful. And I hope, my fervent hope is that it opens up conversations for people and, you know, makes you call your parents and, I don't know, forgive things and...
Well, and what was really stunning about it was the truthfulness of it, which was that we had those scenes where George and his brothers and his mother are forced to make some decisions.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly George, the brother that nobody understood, is the one that the brothers are all turning to and asking for his guidance, when they always dismissed him about being, whether or not he was a real doctor. And suddenly he's more than just a doctor. He's almost the new father figure in the family.
Mm-hmm.
He's suddenly stepping into this leadership role for his family. And just, again, the truthfulness of how a family is forced to come together despite a lot of differences in that kind of tragedy, it's very true. And that your friends are, all they can kind of do is stand by and be there for you, and there's not a whole lot they can say unless they've they've been through something and they can empathize with that experience like Christina right. did. And I thought it was really beautifully handled throughout part one and part two, these little hints about what was happening with Christina
right.
and how she related to this experience and how this experience is actually healing the breach between Christina and George.
Right. If you go back and you watch part one, there are a lot of
Meredith asks, do you have
little
a dad?
Moments. She asks if you have a dad when they're laying, or no, it is actually part two, when they're laying in the on-call room mm-hmm. and Meredith says, is it crazy that I'm a little bit jealous of George? And I think I get that too. Mm-hmm. I get what that would be because I value my relationship that I had with my dad more than, almost anything in my life. And when I think of, people who don't have a dad or who don't have that relationship, it's almost as hard. It's like, if my dad died, it would not change my life. I get that from Meredith, how painful that is. Mm-hmm. And is it wrong of me to be a little bit jealous of George? And then, you're holding on Christina where she says yes, because it is wrong. What George is about to have to go through is so brutal. So I love those moments that we found. If you go back when you see the end and watch again.
And Sandra Oh, I thought especially, was amazing in that scene. And I cut that scene and I just watched her performance and I knew what was in her mind, which was this father that died when she was nine.
Yeah.
I knew the audience didn't know that she had a father that died when she was nine, but Sandra knew that Christina had a father that died when she was nine. And I could just see
that. And that was one of the scenes we added when it went to two parts,
and
too.
And it's a wonderful scene.
It was a new scene.
It's a beautiful scene. Also beautifully shot as well by Herb, our
fabulous DP. I also have to talk about the scene where, because you were talking about the scene where Mr. O'Malley, where George Zenza says goodbye to George. He's trying to say goodbye in the dog murder scene from part one. And George won't do it. His dad says, anything you want to say to me, and George won't play. He's not playing. He's not going to come around to the possibility that his dad might die until this amazing scene where he's shaving his dad in part two. And I say amazing because, first of all, it was TR's idea. I had scripted that scene as George sitting by his father's bed just talking to him. Mm-hmm. But the shaving, I was afraid of it. I was opposed to it. I thought, because often when people are shaving other people and they're emotional in TV or film, it takes away from it for me. Like, I'm like, don't cut him, don't cut him.
It adds a weird tension.
Yeah, I was afraid, but
but
man.
That tension wasn't
the, and I pissed, just... I pissed the director off. I was like, no, you can't have him shaving him. I was very petulant on the set. And they were like, Greg was like, just let us try. And they got it to this just incredibly beautiful, quiet, phenomenal place that just elevated the scene completely, where George is owning his dad says in the beginning, I told you a lie and I'm saying I'm sorry. And George says the same thing here. I lied about, hitting the kid in the face with a stick and I'm saying I'm sorry. And it's sort of this bittersweet, funny, but that's
George and Ronnie blew up the neighbor's lawnmower. That's one of those moments that where you're talking about this sort of bizarre humor that comes out of these tragic situations.
Right.
That line makes me laugh so much every time.
Yeah.
I hear it. They blew up the lawnmower.
They blew up the lawnmower. And when he says, I needed the stick to reach his face.
Anyway, it's just these scenes that you're in the middle of crying and suddenly you start laughing. And it was a great experience to work on these scenes.
And I just have to say, T.R. Knight, if he doesn't get an Emmy for this, he's really... he's phenomenal. He is a phenomenal talent, and I think you saw it here. So
well, and in the scene where they do unplug Mr. O'Malley and he flatlines, and I think the whole family did an incredible job. Deborah Monk was
who's
beautiful
just,
and so graceful in that scene and saying goodbye, and she's leaning down to feel his last breath, not just to kiss him goodbye, but to feel his last breath.
Yeah.
And I thought that was so beautiful.
And that's the thing we did too. Wow. And I remember it so vividly when they took the tubes out of my dad's throat that we hadn't been able to, with those tubes, it dehumanizes them somehow. And when they took it out, we did put our cheeks down to feel his breath. Mm-hmm. And that, so.
One of the more powerful things you can go through in life.
Yeah.
And George T.R. just
unbelievable.
Blew that away. I mean,
he blew it away. And those
amazing
brothers who play Ronnie and Jerry, do you have their names anywhere?
I apologize.
They're really super great. I got to tell you, they're really super great. And here's a funny little aside. I was watching Office Space again recently.
Oh, yeah.
He's that guy from Office Space. One of, the super blonde brothers. You got to go back and watch Office Space because it will kill you.
Yeah.
He is so funny in that movie, and I had not made the connection that it was the same actor.
Same guy.
A little shout out to the O'Malleys.
Yes. So that was the wrenching storyline that was really hard and beautiful, but
That's all we'll say about dead fathers. Let's talk about fun stuff.
Let's talk about fun stuff. Let's talk about abortion.
Oh, no. Okay. Inappropriate.
Sorry. But I have to admit, I was really proud of that storyline being a part of Grey's Anatomy.
I am proud too.
Of Kate Walsh and her performance with that. And that fantastic scene with Callie and Addison. I apologize for saying that so abruptly.
It's fine.
But really, it was an interesting storyline to have going along with this. All of our characters are experiencing a certain kind of grief.
Right.
And that's what is revealed in part two that you may not be understanding about is what's happening between Mark and Addison in part one.
That's the father theme thing that we hinted at in last week's podcast.
Exactly, that Mark could have been a father and Addison had to these decisions that you have to make in life. And I just, again, kudos to Kate Walsh because
she was amazing. Great. And what I have to say, what I love about Grey's Anatomy, what I love about Shonda Rhimes and Betsy Beers and the show is that Shonda came to me and said, I woke up in the middle of the night and realized that Addison aborted Mark's baby. Mm. That was a very late addition to this script. Mm. And it, you know, a lot of people have been speculating what's going on with Addison around babies. And we didn't really have, you know, Addison was having an emotional time and she works with babies. So we didn't have a thing. A lot of people have said, like, is she unable to get pregnant? Like, what's her trip with babies? Because she was crying when that one baby died. But honestly, who wouldn't cry when, you know what I mean? Like, we didn't have an overarching thing with that until Shonda had this epiphany, as sometimes she does. And what I love is just there was no roadblock. Nobody said, no, you can't have a lead female character have had an abortion. Mm-hmm. But I think it's a real thing that a lot of people go through. And and I was very proud to put it on TV and talk about it because, you know, it's not easy these days to especially with women's issues. You know, it's like the difficulty that we've had getting them to let us say vagina. Like, vagina is a bad word. It's a dirty word culturally because vagina is a bad word. Penis, you can say as many times as you want, but vagina is a bad word, which I have found so deeply upsetting as a woman. This is a medical show, and we can't use terms of medical anatomy because somehow in our culture they've been vilified and filthified, and that's a bad word. So that little girls grow up not even knowing that word. Mm-hmm. So that's been like my thing is to put vagina in scripts as frequently as possible and just like get as many of them through as I can because I want to make that word, you know, ubiquitous. I want to just put it out there and
it is a fact of life that it's a difficult thing for women to have an abortion. It truly is, and it affects them in different ways.
And
Mark's
men.
Able to realize that. Yes, he was saddened by it, but Callie helps him to realize that it wasn't the wrong choice because he would have been a horrible father.
And I think that the fact that he's able to own that and acknowledge that tells you that Mark is not without redemption. Mark is not without growth. He's you know, I don't think he's so deeply flawed, but I think that he's a guy who could eventually become somebody who could be a good father, but he wasn't now.
He needs to be able to look himself in the face honestly. Mm-hmm. And Callie's helping him do that. She's holding up a mirror of what he really is.
Yeah.
Which is great.
As compared to say what George is, who would make a beautiful father, and that's what you get from that scene too, is that Callie knows that.
Yeah.
Knows what she has in George.
What
else can we talk about?
With Burke and Christina. Talking about the silent treatment.
I think it's very important to note that Burke and Christina still haven't talked to each other. I think it's very important to note that Burke has given her this little gift of information. Something about the fact that George was unplugging his dad dropped him in emotionally to how petty they were being, but not all the way where he would say words to her. Mm-hmm. He said them to Derek for her. And so you'll see that storyline is continuing into the next episode. These wildly, wildly, fabulously immature, madly in love people are still not talking each other.
But again, it's one of the scenes that was an addition that we added when it became two-parter is the little scene where Christina brings in the tray of food and withholds it from Burke. And that is just, they did an amazing dance of avoidance and power and struggle, and it's comical and wonderful, and Isaiah Washington and Sandro, again, really bringing so much out for those characters. And the thing I loved about that scene is it reminded me of a scene from long ago at the beginning of the relationship when Burke first gave her the cup of coffee, and it was silent, and he slid it next to her, and she had that look on her face, and he said, "It's just coffee." And it reminded me of that's the style of their relationship. It's almost without words, the way they communicate, because they don't know how to talk to each other very
well. Which brings us to my favorite line in this episode, which is when Meredith says, you're in a relationship with no words, and you're a millionaire in $20 shoes, so whatever. I that made me happy. And the both of those scenes, by the way, scenes that were added when we got to go to when we made it a two-parter, neither of those existed in the original script.
I really enjoyed Meredith watching Thatcher.
Oh, man, he was funny.
There are some really nice scenes.
That actor is fantastic.
Jeff Perry.
Thank you. Jeff Perry. Wow, incredible. Pregnant. Brain doesn't work. Jeff Perry. Fantastic. Jeff Perry, little piece of trivia. Married to Linda Lowy, our casting director.
Yes. And I remember seeing him at our Christmas party, and he looked really suave and handsome, and he was standing up straight, and I was again impressed at what a great actor he is, because Thatcher is just about the most ineffectual man.
And that was hard for Jeff. He wants, because he's such a good father, because he's so involved with his two kids, and he's so the opposite of who Thatcher is, it was really hard for him in a couple of scenes to want to be as ineffectual as Thatcher is at parenting Meredith.
He's so committed to this granddaughter.
Yes.
That's actually heartbreaking.
I
think it's heartbreaking for Meredith to have to watch that.
Absolutely.
And I loved all the moments we had in these two episodes of Meredith kind of drifting and sneaking around and just sort of watching watching Thatcher with this baby, because she only had her father till she was about 4 years old or five years old, and so she has so few memories of him.
Yeah,
so
I love that, like, she's quietly stalking because she wants so badly to know him and to see him, but that everything she sees is painful because he's so committed to this other family. And I think part of what's so painful in Meredith's history is that her father was that father to her until Ellis said, "Don't come back anymore," and he didn't have the backbone. Ellis broke him, and he didn't have the backbone to fight. And I have to say, I don't and can't blame Ellis for that. Ellis was who Ellis is. Mm-hmm. Thatcher, we can talk about how she broke him, but at the end of the day, he abandoned his daughter.
Yeah.
He did not stand up to her. He did not show up. That's on him.
There is not a drawer full of unopened cards.
Full of unopened cards. And that is so hard for Meredith. It was hard for Jeff Perry to want. He wanted so badly to be more effective in the way he was communicating with her.
Mm-hmm.
And that just comes from, it's like why I want so badly for Burke and Christina to grow up a little bit, because I've had some years of therapy, and I feel like, why are they, but not everybody, you know, not everybody is a father like Jeff Perry is a father. Not everybody, you know, is mature in a relationship. And what's wonderful, I think, about Grey's Anatomy is that we let people be deeply flawed. And that gives them somewhere to go.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that you are going to love the places that we're going with Meredith and Thatcher. Mm-hmm. And I think you're going to love the places that we're going with Christina and Burke and with George and Callie. And I think what we've got here is a lot of room for people to grow.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fun. When people are just there, when people are just grown up, when people are just mature and have had therapy and have figured out and can articulate, you know, if Thatcher were able to say, "I'm so sorry, Meredith, I'm so sorry I wasn't a father to you, it was my mistake, and I want to be a father now, and please let me parent you, and let me take you out to dinner, and please come be a part of our family," where are we going to go with those people? I know everybody wants him to be that guy who's able to say all those things that she wants to hear. She wants him to be that guy, but he's not.
Yeah.
And people aren't.
He's doing the best he can.
He's doing the best he can.
There, one of our episodes in the fall, that was something Meredith said to her mother. You know, you did the best you knew how to do. And I think Meredith is starting to realize that about Thatcher, too.
Yeah.
And it was a really nice scene between the two of them. Yeah. Offers her the advice
about the wax earplug. She reaches out for some little tiny thing that maybe they share in common that she can see, which is the snoring. And she takes the advice, and she takes off all those nose strips. I think it's hilarious that she's wearing, like, three nose strips in one of those scenes. Like, I don't know. You know, you see her wearing, like, one at the beginning, and then, like, by day five or whatever it is, she's got, like, a rainbow of nose strips on, and they're not working. And she's given up, and she's not wearing any nose strips. She's not trying to change anymore who she is, because there's a part of her that really loves that she shares something with her father. So she's given up trying to stop snoring, and she's going to make Derek address it from his end. She's just going to embrace this piece of her that is Thatcher, whether she's conscious of that or not. That was our design, is Meredith
has this one thing that she can hold on to that her dad gave her. Exactly. So it goes from being this sort of horrifying thing to being this kind of beautiful thing. Is he gave me my snoring.
Yeah.
So.
Well, talking about embracing parts of yourself, I just also want to talk about Izzy. Learning to embrace who she is.
Which is
someone who cares deeply and is compassionate and is also a surgeon, and learning how to balance the two.
Uh-huh.
And how that was really wonderfully illustrated in part two by Bailey's own struggle with how compassionate and tied in she felt with the O'Malleys. So much so that she's hesitant before performing this procedure that she's done a million times.
Right.
Of reintubating Mr. O'Malley.
Right.
And I think it was really wonderful to see, just to see Bailey learning that experience of both how becoming too attached to your patient can be dangerous for you as a doctor. It can make you hesitate. And Bailey's been experiencing this really interesting journey of experiencing crisis in her self-confidence because Burke and Christina were cutting her out of surgeries.
Right.
And then feeling so overwhelmed by her connection to Mr. O'Malley that she's hesitating before doing this intubation. And then basically learning that that's what Izzy is actually managing to balance really successfully. I mean,
Learning. I think the truth is that Izzy and Bailey are a lot alike. I think the truth is that Bailey is both too. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's really clear in that moment that Bailey is not unaffected by having just turned off all the machines on Mr. O'Malley. Mm-hmm. She is not personally involved.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's part of why she pushes so hard against Izzy is because you teach best what you most need to learn. And Bailey, part of why she's so hard sometimes in her presentation is because she's trying to rise above the fact that she is at her heart a person who becomes emotionally involved with patients. We've seen it time and time again.
Mm-hmm.
We saw it with the mom who had the cancer, breast cancer, and wouldn't decide about the surgery was blaming the baby that episode.
Mm-hmm.
We saw Bailey emotionally involved. She is a surgeon who becomes emotionally involved.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that what was nice with them sitting there, the way Greg shot that, I thought was beautiful, with them sitting sort of as equals. Because a death like this, the loss of Mr. O'Malley, is a great equalizer.
Yeah.
You know, nobody, it's like that scene where George is yelling at, what a great scene. What a great performance by all of those actors. But George yelling at being the chief, he shouldn't have done it. What I loved when I was just watching that scene again is how there is no deference.
Mm-hmm.
There is no, I'm an intern and you're the chief of surgery and I'm yelling at you. It's I'm the son of a patient and you were my father's surgeon and you shouldn't have done it, you know? And it's this equalizer of it's like one of the only times you'll see George speak to Richard on those terms, you know?
Mm-hmm.
What a good job.
T.R. Knight.
All three of those actors.
Yeah.
Truly, you see how hard that is for Jim Pickens and Shonda Wilson's, for those characters, because George is right.
Mm-hmm.
They shouldn't have done it. I think that they shouldn't have done it. It's not their job, you know, whatever. I think that what we did a good job of is that dilemma.
Mm-hmm.
You understand, you really understand when Mr. O'Malley asks them, please do the surgery. I want a chance to fight the cancer. You really get it. But they did a surgery pretty much knowing that there's almost no chance he's going to fight through it. Almost no chance. Mm-hmm. How do you do that without saying, no, your whole family has to sign off, or no, your son is my intern. I will not do that without talking to him.
Yeah, and George makes the point that he could have had months. My mother could have had months with him, which I was really touched by that in that moment that he's thinking about his mom.
Yeah.
And that, you know, her ability to say goodbye and the time she could have had.
Yeah, when she reveals to the other mom, I just thought I'd be taking him home. Oh, heartbreaking, Deborah Monk. She's phenomenal. We need to talk. What else do we need to talk about?
And Alex, speaking of,
Of
decisions you maybe shouldn't have made.
I think you guys are going to be, I think you're going to actually be surprised and intrigued by where we're going with Alex and Addison. I think it's a different place than you expect. I think it's a different place than we've gone before.
Mm-hmm.
Frankly, it's a different place than we planned to go when we shot that scene. Mm. We've made some really fun creative decisions that you should tune in for.
Something that I loved about that scene, just seeing them kiss finally was the payoff for me for a long time ago, having Shonda up in the editing room when we were cutting episode 202, which was the first script of Krista's that I got to cut, which was phenomenal, and that was Into You Like a Train, one of our favorite episodes ever. But that was sort of the first meeting, I think, of Alex and Addison. And if you remember, Alex was taking care of the two pregnant women. They had both been fertilized
I can't believe you remember these things.
I'm going to tell you why, because so Alex is taking care, and this pregnant woman comes up to find her friend who's also pregnant, was very badly burned.
Right.
And Addison just yells at him and dresses him down and takes him apart for letting this woman
walk through the hospital without
a neck brace, without, you know, fully taking care of her. And Addison just gets in his face and yells at him. And as Shonda watched that in the cutting room, she just said, "They are so getting together." And so I've been waiting to see them smooch because I know it's been coming.
Yeah.
Since,
I thought it was hot.
I thought the kissing was pretty hot.
And, you know.
But what was hot about it also was actually that it was really gentle. And it was really out of this place of
deep pain.
Just needing comfort.
Yeah.
Well, that was Krista's script. And it was a great one.
As cut by Susan Dale, and as shot by Greg Yatanis, and as brilliantly acted by our brilliant cast.
A wonderful cast.
We really hope you guys liked it. We know it was super sad. We're sorry.
And next week's episode is Great Expectations, and you can have great expectations for that because it is a knockout. It's great.
This is Krista.
And Susan.
Bye.
That's about it for this week. Join us again next time for more Grey's Anatomy recaps. And as always, you can check out more Grey's Anatomy online, including the writer's blog written by Krista, at abc.com. Great Expectations airs next Thursday, January 25th, from 9 to 10 p.m., only on ABC.
This is for Mac McKinney. Mac, your chance has passed to play professional ball, but you can live vicariously through Vince Young's rookie year. You've obviously seen how he plays. Now see how he lives with AT&T Home Turf. Just go online to attbluerum.com/sports for exclusive access into your favorite athletes' worlds. See inside Vince's home and check out the AT&T technology that keeps him connected. So that's Mac's world. For everyone who's not Mac, if we can deliver his favorite quarterback to him, we've got what it takes to deliver your favorite athletes to you. The new AT&T. Your world, delivered.